Who's new? Good, we might confuse you. We didn't have a subject last time for conversation. We didn't pick one, did we? No. What we usually do in that case is we ask for questions. I see the question car coming. So I'll give you a few seconds to think about. You got any questions on Buddhism? It doesn't matter. It can be very basic. If you're new to Buddhism, it can be very complicated. If you're not, because they all come out in the wash. It's always an occasion for a branching talk. คนนั้นไปไหนล่ะ เมื่อกี้นี่เห็น We still have three people coming, so. Do you have any? Are you new to Buddhism or?
I read on.
You've read on it? Are you from Lansing or?
Owosso.
Where?
Owosso.
Owosso. Are there any Buddhists in Owosso? It's like where I'm from in Midland. I mean, there's one, two, your friend, right? told Chris to make 15 copies of that, so that now we've gone up to like, what, 20? I'll be giving a talk in Midland on the 28th, which is a Sunday, from 2 in the afternoon to 4. And if anybody wants to go, we can meet here 12 o'clock. And there will be a couple of cars going from here if anybody wants to go to that one. The more the better. I mean, there might not be anybody from Midland but two or three people. So we had the choice of a conference room, which is like 10 people. Then what was the next step up? What did they call that? Lounge, which was 49 people only. And then theater, which is like 200. So we counted up the people I know that are going, the people he knows that are going. So it came to about over 20. So we thought, well, if the high school and Northwood and Midland come and it's over 49, they won't let them in. So we got the theater. So the more filler we have, you can just fall asleep if you want. Just take up a chair. It's tricky because being my hometown, I do not want my mother attending, who's a devout Catholic. But my nieces and people are really interested in Buddhism, basically going that way, and my sister is already a Buddhist, which aggravates parts of the family. Tricky. It's almost like having to do an underground talk. No questions? Okay.
What are the Buddhist beliefs on reincarnation and the afterlife?
We don't have reincarnation.
You don't believe?
That's Hindu. People sometimes talk about rebirth in Buddhism.
Yeah.
But surprise, there is no word for rebirth in Buddhism. Can anybody name a Pali word that means rebirth? No. There's no word. So the Buddha used two words, pawa, to become, becoming, and jati, birth. But there is no rebirth. So, Hinduism teaches reincarnation. Tibetan Buddhism is kind of on the edge there with that. Little misleading. Traditional Orthodox Buddhism, there's no word for rebirth, but there is a word for birth. So there's death and there's birth. The cause of death is birth. Cause of birth is death. So there is, I'm glad you asked that, because that's what I'm having Chris go copy. I thought if nobody has anything today, we're going to talk about something that will take us into that. But people have a very difficult time, monks included, have a very difficult time understanding rebirth, and which is coined in English. It is compared to someone lighting a candle with another candle. You take a candle and you light another one. Is it the same flame or different? Because in Buddhism there's no soul and there's no self. Well, no permanent self. There's a self, but it's impermanent. But the idea of an eternal, unchanging, divine self, there isn't any such thing. So there is you when you were 3 years old, when you were 10 years old, however you're old now. Are you the same person or another? If you think when you were three, you say, well, that, yeah, that's me, but it's, but I'm nothing like that. So it is this, at the end of someone's life, there is the last, oh, geez, where do I start? See, if you, we start with the idea of mind. Mind arises, persists, and dies, passes. And from the death of that last thought, a new one arises, persists, and so in Buddhism, the mind is arising, and living and dying constantly. That is also called rebirth. When the body dies, because mind and body are tied, when the body dies, the last thought falling away conditions the first thought in the new body, which is in Buddhism is a fertilized egg. And that first thought arising then conditions a continuing consciousness, not the same consciousness. So then we can look at it from another point of view when the Buddha said, well, when this earth had no life on it, it was boiling hot, and when it cooled, he said it cooled like boiled milk. It developed a scum of earth on top of it. In other words, the lava and everything cooled and became islands and land. And at that point, energy occupied material and became conscious. It became a creature. But not male or female, no faculties, no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no sexual reproduction, just a blob, which reproduced on its own. This developed eventually into human beings after millions and millions and millions of years. So when we look at, it's a combination of, you can call it energy. Consciousness is a combination of material and that which makes material aware. That constantly changes. From every individual in here has a different consciousness, a different way of thinking, So I don't know if you printed enough or not.
15.
It won't be enough. We'll pass them out. We'll see what. You might not need it. So people who don't need it. So to put it simply, there's no individual or soul there is a process where that arises from condition, persists and passes, and that happens many times a second, or the death of a body to the beginning of life in the womb. So it's a rebirth, but it's also a rebirth that's going on now. But as I said, people get that confused with Hinduism, which posit there's a soul that's reborn again and again. Buddhism is the only religion, not really religion, but the only teaching that does not posit a soul. I have to have one, otherwise I don't know what I'm talking about. Oh, he's got two. Any other questions? Or a question on that?
I think I saw a special on TV about Buddhism and how when someone dies, they see their future parents. Like they said it was like they were reading of
the Tibetan Book of the Dead is not Buddhist. I mean, it's culturally Buddhist, but it's not what the Buddha said or taught at all. And this is a big problem in America, or in the world, that there is dissimulation of information that is not Buddhist. And I would say, especially Tibetans, singing, dancing, gonging, Taras, you know, gods and goddesses, and this has nothing to do with Buddhism whatsoever. So you, the evolution of Buddhism. At the time of the Buddha, you had every kind of religion you could think of was being taught. There was no gods. There was agnostics, atheists, many gods, one god. Humanism, atomism, materialism. Everything you can think of was taught. He was well aware of all these teachings. The Hinduism at the time was a little more primitive than it is now. Upanishads were being developed. It isn't the Hinduism, modern Hinduism, where the Upanishads are now all kind of polished. But the Hindus believed in a soul and reincarnation, that you as an individual go on and on and on. They believed that everything is an illusion. Literally, everything is not real. And behind this is the ultimate reality, which is Brahma. And you must try to contact ultimate reality and become one with the universe. Now, if you say one with the universe, that's New Age. But in fact, it's very, very, very old. It's just rehashed again. So the Buddha came along and says, well, no, there's there is no self or soul that gets reborn constantly, and there is no ultimate reality behind these are real. Everything is actually real. The mind's value and interpretation of them is what is not real. Now, that's how we value something, or how we believe something, or how we see something is often not real. The objects themselves are quite real. But the most the problem is we see ourselves in such a way that causes us suffering. And it's not a real way to see self. So the Buddha took body and mind apart and said there's nothing there but processes working together. So there is a self, but it's not permanent. It's impermanent. Then it teaches a quite straightforward, plain and simple teaching. And as soon, actually before he died, it started to develop schisms. Other ideas started to come in. But after his death, there were some major breakups. One eventually became the Chinese form of Buddhism, or Mahayana. One became the Tibetan. Buddhism didn't get to Tibet until 700 years after his death. Now, before Buddhism in Tibet was Bon religion, magical witch doctors, you know, secret worlds and ghosts. And then, on top of Bon, Hinduism came before Buddhism. So then they had new gods and new. Then Buddhism came and they squished it all together in some kind of giant sandwich. And the flavor is Tibet. Culture is Tibet. Some of the things much older than Buddhism, and some after Buddhism came, you know, the mixture of all these things. So Tibetan Buddhism and Chinese Buddhism and all the other Buddhisms, you have to be careful not to separate culture and the latter-day teaching from what the Buddha originally was talking about. Because eventually this creates big problems. So people will come in and say, well, we worship Buddha as a god. And you say no, and they say, well, I just read a book. because there are some Buddhisms that do worship him as a god. Not this particular Buddha. They've made up other Buddhas now. Oh, Western paradise, Eastern paradise, North, South paradises. So when you read a, when you see a special on Theravada Buddhism, classical Buddhism, would put everybody to sleep. It's boring. Americans don't like that. They want to see gongs and drums and possession and babbling, and that's what we want to see. And unfortunately, that's what attracts people. Sand mandalas. What does that have to do with Buddhism? Drawing pictures in sand. Nothing. So the art forms and the culture and all that hoopla is what we like. And I'm sure, you know, we're aware of religions in the world, not Buddhist, but all religions, that have these tremendous ceremonies that everybody attends. They can be huge parades, or they can be some form of self-torture, or they can be sacrificed to whatever they're supposed to be sacrificed. People love that. You get somebody who has never been to a ceremony in their whole life, but when they have a ceremony that people stick iron spikes through their cheeks, everybody goes. They get entertainment out of it, but with the understanding, they get absolutely zero. So original Buddhism is important. And I keep telling, you know, everybody who comes here first study Theravada Buddhism. First know what the Buddha actually taught. Then go on to the other more flowery. So at least you can sift through. It isn't that you can't enjoy a Tibetan band or opera or that's not a problem. It's understanding how what the symbolism is, and it is not representative of Buddhism. So yeah, you'll read and see on the internet and probably documentaries that are pretty wild. It's interesting that in Buddhists don't sing. Does anybody here know a Buddhist song that we sing in the temple? These people are from a Buddhist country, right? No, you don't sing, you don't dance, you don't play music. As a form of rites or ritual, because the Buddha says rites and rituals is not a good thing. But in Tibetan Buddhism, that's practically all they do. Play, you know, their forms of chanting are accompanied by music and drumming and gongs and different kinds of voice modulations and dancing. So that's cultural. So maybe Buddhism isn't as exciting as you thought. We don't get dressed up here.
But there is chanting.
There's chanting, yeah. There's chanting. Chanting is... At the time of the Buddha, there was no writing. All the Buddha's talks were memorized. And chanting is a form of memorization because it has a rhythm. It's not singing, and it's not a song, it's not accompanied by music. But monks doing it together, this is how the whole of the Tripitaka, the whole of the Buddha's teaching was passed down, because monks memorized it. And if you go to the Guinness Book of Records, you will find, to your surprise, the person with the best and most memory is a Buddhist monk from Burma, who can recite hours and hours and hours and from memory. And Thai monks, actually all monks from Theravada tradition, are required to chant without reading. So when you either know a chant or you don't know a chant, you can't read while you're chanting. So So you'll see the monks, you know, when we have ceremonies, we'll just sit here and we'll chant from memory. And that can go on for quite a long time. But what we're chanting is actually words of the Buddha. So it's a sutta. As for instance, if it's a sutta, it may start Ewame sutang ekam sabiyang pagawasa watiyang viharati. I don't even have to think to recite that. Ewame sutang. Once upon a time I heard. Thus have I heard. Ekam yang pagawa sawatiyang viharati. In the Blessed Udan was living at Sawati. Viharati is a monastery so monks can do that without even, you don't even think, it just turns on automatic because of the memorization. So that's what it was originally for. Chanting is to make sure that Dhamma doesn't disappear. And even though everybody's sitting here, you know, probably nobody knows what we're chanting. The monks know, we know what we're saying, but nobody else. Because Pali is not a spoken language. But from that memorization, that it was all written down later. So still monks have the tradition, remember it. Because if suddenly all the books disappeared on earth, all computers, all literature, all books, and all that was left was memory, we could write from scratch, word for word, all the Tripitaka. Which is like, in English, probably 40-some books, 40 to 50 books. In other words, it's about 20 times as big as the Bible. It's all memorized. I don't have it all memorized, but there are monks in the world, there are a few that have it all memorized, but we could all get together and we know parts of it that could all be put together. That was the original intent. So chanting at the time of the Buddha, remember, those people understood what he was saying. They understood what the monks were saying. So that chanting is a number of purposes for it.
Do they change their voice? For some reason I've heard they activate different...
Tibetan again. You're talking about throat singing.
Yeah, where it's like...
Anybody here can throat sing? It's very interesting, but no. The Buddha said, you cannot chant in a sing-song voice. He was careful not to make it singing. So monks are forbidden. There are only a couple occasions where there's a style of chanting. So in the style could be from Sri Lanka or Burma or Thailand or I belong to a sect of monks called the Dhammayutika. Dhammayutika are the latest sect. So about 120 years old. Before that there was the Mahanikaya sect only, well, with branches of it. So some of the sects were from Sri Lanka, because when Buddhism would die out in Thailand, the monks would come from Sri Lanka. When Buddhism died out in Sri Lanka, monks from Thailand went to Sri Lanka. So we have two Sri Lankan people here, and you have a Siam Nikaya, right? They have a sect which is called the Siamese sect, which was imported monks from Thailand when their Buddhism was in trouble. So you keep borrowing these things. Mahanikaya sect is from Sri Lanka, which is the major... We're about 5% of the monks. Very, very small. But, chanting. Tamiyut have a flat chant. Very flat. We went back to original Pali pronunciation to be careful, you know, to pronounce it correctly. Because the Mahanikaya sect do not pronounce Pali correctly. If you say Buddha, for instance, in Mahanikaya, in Thailand, it's called Putta, P. If you say Dhamma, it's called, pronounced Tamma. This is not correct. But it is popular because Mahanikai chant like that. Why? It's from the writing system when it was written down. But anyway, the chanting itself, Dhammayut is flat. Then there's chanting called Samyok. And then there's Devanagari. All these chantings differ. I think Thai people notice that, right? Different chanting. Yeah, you must be able to notice. And there's chanting for funerals, which is very beautiful, very elaborate. But otherwise, the chanting is supposed to be flat, and it's supposed to communicate a message, not to sing song or be pleasant to listen to. If I had the other two monks here, we could give a demonstration on the three or four different types of chanting. They're in the house, so. Anything else? As I say, everybody has to be careful. It's the spirit of Buddhism. The spirit of Buddhism is to question. The Buddha says, question me. Not only other beliefs, but question me as well. Question my Dhamma. That is, and it's called investigation of phenomena, Dhamma Vijaya in Buddhism. And it is to be healthily skeptical. The Buddha says, don't believe because you like it. Don't believe because it matches what you already think. Don't believe out of respect, out of love. Because they're your elder, because etc. He has this long list out of tradition, out of culture. Don't believe out of any of those things, because you're throwing the dice. It's a 50-50. It could be wrong, could be right. You don't know. If you don't know, you shelve it with everything. If you don't know it, you shelve it. So you think of a judge in a court, and somebody comes in and says, this person just stole from me. Okay, throw him in jail. How could our legal system work? You must have evidence. You must have a chain of events. You must have a witness, which is oneself. You can't just believe something because, well, my mom, you know, I grew up like that. Well, I'd be Catholic, wouldn't I? I grew up Catholic. My mom's Catholic. No, I'm a pain in St. Peter's side, I'll tell you, when it comes to my mother. She doesn't like this. St. Patrick will come and save me, but he's no longer a saint, I guess. So Buddhism says you go knock down all the walls. The worst thing to be as a Buddhist, as a Christian, now this is a quality that you should be, other religions. As a Buddhist, the worst thing you can be is to have a hermetically sealed brain. In other words, if you say, I don't believe in God, it's a sin and you're going to hell. They don't allow that question. Was Jesus really the Savior? Going to hell. I don't think the Pope, you know, I think him and the bear do the same thing in the woods. Oh my, I'll burn forever. The Buddha didn't like that. Otherwise, he would be a Hindu and he would never have changed anything. He wouldn't have questioned. In Buddhism, you must question. Questions are good. Questions are good. So we have people who have been coming here for years that still say, I don't believe in rebirth, a new birth. That's all right, shelve it. So you say to them, do you believe your mind arises, persists, and passes? Yeah, that's rebirth. That's all you have to believe. That's all you have to know. My mind, from causes, a thought arises, persists due to causes, falls away, and sparks a new thought. There it is. If you believe that, okay, you're Buddhist. You know, that's a deal in. Because we are fixated on self, I am going to be reborn. No, you're not. We can't get rid of the idea of me. So when we think, in my last life, who's me? When I was 3 years old, I don't know who that brat was. I mean, genetically, yes, but that's it. I'm not that 3 year old. And yet we think, in my last life, we picture, here I am, you know, my personality. No. This is why we get it all wrong. This is why it seems mystical, reincarnation. It's a process. Transference of energy. A dying person is like, the mind of a dying person is like tuning, like a radio tuning. When they hit a clear station, there they go. So when you die, it doesn't mean you're born, it doesn't mean that the next body that mind takes is not from the previous one. It is, because it's cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. What you are attuned to, what your mind is tuned to, is that is what you're going to be born as. So you can't be on your dying bed and say, geez, next life I want to be emperor of the universe. Or I want to be rich or famous or good looking. It doesn't work like that. The sum quality of your consciousness has to tune with whatever you're going into, the next body. So, good people, kind, generous, compassionate, good people, they don't have to worry about next life. But not good people, trying to think of what they could be born as, you know, without getting in trouble, because this is on tape. Could be a politician. Could be an actor. Or an actress, or a boy band. You know, all those horrible things that make life miserable. There is a misunderstanding that Buddhism, that you're born as animals and animals are born in human. No. No. That's Hinduism. You can't be born as something you're not compatible with. So humans are generally born as humans.
Generally.
If you behave as an animal. Let's say you're a serial killer or you're extremely cruel. You behave as an animal. Then you could be born as an animal. For maybe a lifetime, two lifetimes. You're not stuck as an animal. Animals are not born as human beings. Extremely rare. Extremely rare. They can't make karma. Their good and bad acts are instinct. Animals are not evil. They're automated. They're conditioned. So a cat eats a mouse. It isn't because it's nyeh-eh-eh, you know. I'm going to tie it to a railroad track and have it run over. It's not cartoon stuff. They're made like that. Their minds are conditioned like that. So in Buddhism, you don't have just... Obviously, you have the human conscious. But in Buddhism, you have... The Buddha says, okay, you've got conscious, you've got subconscious, you've got instinct and hardwiring, and you've got pavangacitta, primal mind. It's four layers. Eventually, psychologists will come up with this, but they haven't yet. I think they've come up with three of them. So there's the consciousness we think we're aware of. Then there's the subconscious, which we have motivations, right? Unconscious. We might be motivated to do, say, or think something with a subconscious motivation, but we only are conscious of what we're doing, saying, and thinking, but not why. Then there's the instinctual one, fight, flight, right? I love, I could give a perfect example. One of our, Ajahn Nuntagun, the monk from Thailand. If you scare him, you will be punched. It's totally harmless. But if you come up behind him, or you come around a corner and you scare him, you go, the temple boys here know this fact. You don't scare him, because he has a very fast reflex, which is to maim you. And then he's like, what? He's like surprised, but that's the first reaction. Very fast reaction. No karma in it, because there's no intention. It is simply an instinctive reaction. Fight, flight. That's our basic. That is not subconscious or conscious. It happens. Citta kriya. Citta means the mind, and kriya means a behavior of the mind. And this is one of those, we have many behaviors that have no intention behind them. It has no cetana, it has no intention. But it is a cetasic, it is an action, mind action. But kriya means it is just wired. It makes no karma, so that's part of our third layer of mind, which is instinct. Interestingly enough, I don't know if anybody knows this, but you're going to know it today. An arahant, an enlightened being, has only citta kriya. An enlightened being makes no karma. End of making karma. They don't make any more. So all of their mental actions are citta kriya. That's it. Once you're enlightened, show's over. Done. Finished.
So do you not live on the earth?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, walk around. They like the sunset and the sunrise. And they're not, you know, zombies or robots. What they like, I like this food, I don't like that food. I like the sunset, I don't like the rain. They have choices. I want to live here because the scenery is beautiful. They have choices, but there's nobody in the house. There's nobody there anymore. There's no I, there's no ego, there's nothing to collect anything. So, if they have really good food and they say, this is delicious, and the next day they have really bad food, it's the same. They don't suffer from changes. My body hurts. I broke my leg. All right, broke my leg. There is pain in body, there is not pain in my mind. The mind is observing the pain of the body separate. It doesn't connect. So even though the Buddha, towards the end of his life, you know, said, I am always in pain. But it has no effect. Didn't bother him. This is kriya citta. But we, on the other hand, I am in pain is the first thing that happens. So if we stub our toe, the mind goes right to the toe and brings the pain up into the mind, and it owns it and it says, I am in pain. And that's why we suffer. And arahant doesn't have an I anymore. So the pain just runs around. He has awareness, he has consciousness, but that is not an enlightened being. Those things have nothing to do with an enlightened being. Body and mind is now simply kriya citta. It's simply an activity without nobody's home. So you can present mail and bill them and try to repossess the house. It's okay. Nobody's there. They're not going to care about it. On the death of that body and mind, then that's fini. There's no birth again. So where do they go? It's a trick question, isn't it? Yeah, everybody's shaking their head. Don't answer, they're saying. Interesting. We'll get to this next P. keep these. We'll get to these next. See, questions always lead to interesting. Thank you for your questions.
I must be a born Buddhist.
Good. But questions always lead to something else. Because, especially if you're new to Buddhism, you can't just... Well, in Buddhism, there's no rebirth. You can't leave it at that. And then to tie it in, you know, you go in all these directions. Everything in Buddhism is cause and effect. There's no beginning. You know, like, oh, how did this all get here? There must be a God because... Well, then who made God would be the Buddhist question, the obvious question. Oh, there's nothing before him. Well, then why don't you say there's nothing before the universe? It doesn't make any sense to a Buddhist. So there is no chicken and egg. There is no beginning. Just cycles, up and down, up and down. So the Buddha basically was talking about Big Bang, right? The universe starts and he calls it evolution and devolution of the universe. Over and over, endless, infinite, and forever in the future. No stops. So where do you go when you've stopped? Because all of these things are dependent upon conditions. They have to have hetu. In Pali, the word is hetu, meaning a reason, a cause. Has to be before. So your mind arises from a previous thought, persists because of conditions, how it's fed perceptions, how it's fed feelings, thought formations, and it passes, dies, and goes to a new thought dependent on the one you just had. Body is dependent on conditions. You have to eat, you have to take care of it, it's dependent on conditions. It grows, it gets old, drops dead. So everything has this conditional. But if you're enlightened, where do you go? The body and mind die. They're impermanent. They're not self. Where does an enlightened person go? That was a question that was asked the Buddha. Now the problem is that our brains are not good enough. Because we can only, everybody in this room, including myself and anybody I've ever talked to, can only think in conditioned states. So if you think about where does an enlightened person go after they die, we're already thinking about that person as a self. We can only think in terms of body and mind. Okay, let's say we get rid of body, then we have some kind of angel or spirit or ghost, still a conditioned state. If it's conscious, consciousness is conditioned. It's impermanent, it's not self. So you take away all those conditioned states, meaning you take away mind and body. There's no feeling, no perception, no thought formations, no consciousness, and no body. But that never was that enlightened person. Because there never was anybody home. That's just the form. That's just what the vehicle they're driving through life with. But there's no driver. There's nobody home. Where do they go after that dies? They go where they were when they were alive. Because there's nobody there anyway. See, if you confuse body and mind with an enlightened person, that's wrong. So a Brahmin, the Buddha's sitting under a tree. And he's sitting and he looks bright and golden, and this Brahma passing is impressed by him. And he says, are you a god? And he says, no, I'm not a god. Well, are you like an angel then? No, not an angel. Well, are you some kind of tree spirit? No. Well, are you a human being? No. I am gone. So the word for Buddha, Tathagata, Tata means thus, Gata means gone. I'm the thus gone. I'm gone. He says, do you think the Buddha is body? And I said, no. Do you think the Buddha is mind? Am I feelings? No, you're not. Buddha is not feelings. Am I perceptions? No, you're not perceptions. Am I thought? Is that what a Buddha is? No, you're not thought. Well, am I consciousness? No. He says that even here and now, sitting here, you cannot see me or understand me. So when he's not body and mind, we think about where does he go after he's dead, after the body and mind cease. But it isn't. It's exactly where he was when the body and mind were still here. Where is it? Mind can't understand because we can only think in terms of conditions. So he says, do I exist after death? No. Okay, then you don't exist after death. No, that doesn't apply. Will you both exist and not exist after death? No, doesn't apply. Then you neither exist nor not exist after death. Doesn't apply. Those are all conditioned states. So how, what is nibbana? What is enlightenment? It's not a place. It's not a state, because states are impermanent.
So once you become enlightened, you don't go backwards.
Backwards?
Well, I guess other religions, I suppose, call it backsliding or...
No. It's not even enlightenment. Once you reach a certain understanding or insight into Buddhism, we call stream winner. So tapana in Pali, stream winner, you don't go backwards. And stream winner is that difficult. People think it's hard. It's not really very hard. So once you reach that state, then you're fine. You're fine. So that stream winner is far from enlightened, but it is accessible to us everyday people. A stream winner is very possible. It was more possible, and you read the suttas, it's more possible in the suttas than it is now, simply because time, over time, it's elevated the teaching of the Buddha, keeps pushing it up so that people can't get to it. But in fact, it's not like that. The Buddha was talking to you and me and everybody in this room. He's just talking to people. It isn't, wow, you know, to get a stream winner, wow. I love this one story of a relative of the Buddha, cousin, who was an alcoholic and died of alcoholism. And he was a stream winner. And the people in the village says, how can he be a stream winner? He's an alcoholic. The Buddha said, yes, he is a stream winner. So we've made, you know, people lift it up so high that they think, stream winner, wow. I'll try, you know. I think I know a few stream winners. I think I know a few stream winners. They might not know it themselves.
Like, what are trees?
Huh?
How can you tell?
A stream winner is basic. Stream winner is automatically a good person. Their basis is a good person. Their thoughts, their speech, their action, they're good. They're trustworthy. They keep the virtue. They don't lie. They don't steal. They don't kill. They don't cheat. They're solidly a good person. And a stream winner, the other factor in stream winner is, I totally believe what the Buddha is teaching. I totally believe it. I totally understand it, and I think yes, he was enlightened. So it's trust and conviction that never wavers anymore. To get to that, you have to question and. It doesn't mean you don't have doubts. That's not what I'm talking about. The Buddha says, if you have doubts, ask questions. It doesn't mean you don't believe. It simply says, oh, would you further explain that? I don't quite understand. Still be a stream winner. So basically it's virtue and no doubts. In other words, they have great conviction and they have great virtue. Those are the main things for a stream winner. And they can never return. They cannot become non-Buddhist. Not possible. It's wonderful in America because you can see it happening. Over a long period of time, you can actually see someone, their view moving, and all of a sudden, oh. Because it's a worldview that is very different from the West. This is impermanent. This isn't divine. This isn't intelligent design. What a mess. My nephew could do better in his biology lab. Bad back, rotten. You wear glasses, right? Why do we wear glasses? Oh, perfect design. Teeth fall out. I've got plastic teeth. Perfect design. Bad backs. Painful childbirth. Bad design. Isn't it interesting how people can shift and say, look at this beautiful machine. Play lovely music and they show you little flowers and waterfalls. They don't show you the chipmunk being torn apart by a cat in the background. Or, you know, nah, oh, da-di-da. You know, religious advertising on TV. It's so obscene. Life is, hey, this is what life is like. And it's freeing and liberating to say, yeah, birth, old age, sickness, and death. Get on with it. Face it. That's the way nature is. Nature is red in tooth and claw. Yeah. It's not evil. It's not bad. It's not. That's just the way things are. So you get reality. In other words, the Buddha says you must see things as they really are, not how you want them to be. Not fairy tales and myths to make up for, ooh, a tsunami, an earthquake, God's wrath, right? Why does he always hit the good people? I mean, somebody should bargain with him. Why do you always hit the good people?
Maybe he's got really bad aim and bad
idea. See, I never thought of it that way. Things happen to really good people, bad things, and things happen to really bad people that are good. You don't make sense of it by saying, ooh, you know, it's a mystery. Who knows the will? That's a cop-out. It's the way things are. Gravity, it drops. Oh, well, geez. Is that getting revenge on the bottle or something? Right? Gravity is not intelligent. It's not out to get me if I fall out of a tree and break a leg. No, it's just gravity. It treats us all fairly. It's what life is like. It runs by rules. They're not intelligent. They're not compassionate. They just say, okay, this is, you know, learn the rules, and then you have a happy life. You don't say, ooh, someone's out to get me, which is just paranoia. Especially the fuzzy person in the sky that glows. I mean, it's... Think if someone says Santa Claus is watching you day and night, you know, through your windows and following you around, stalking you, it would freak you out, wouldn't it? This big bearded guy in a red suit, and every time you look up, he ducks out of the window, writing. Whoa! So Buddhism is, this is reality. This is real. The body's real, the mind is real, they're all real. The mind's value of things, how it views things, can be distorted. So gold and diamonds are the most valuable thing on earth, more valuable than human beings and blood and land, and that's the most valuable thing. Weird, isn't it? What do you do with a diamond? It's just bling, right? It doesn't cure you of diseases. It doesn't make you cooler or hotter. It doesn't make people better or worse. It doesn't. It's just compressed carbon. As I always call it, the essence of death. And we value that. People kill, cheat, lie, steal, go to war, enslave for that junk. That's the mind. That's what the mind is doing. There's where the delusion comes from. Diamonds are real. They're not real. And they happen to be sparkly and pretty. I mean, crows love them. Probably monkeys would love them. Our dog wouldn't love them because they don't taste good. Our dog would not value a diamond. He might swallow it, but he wouldn't value it. Not over his doggy treats. It's more sensible. That's common sense. This I can eat. This is good for me. What is this piece of junk? I can't, you know, it's not worth even burying. So you give us a hamburger, or you say, do you want a diamond or a hamburger? Diamond! What are you talking about, hamburger? Then you get a starving person. You want a diamond or a hamburger? Hamburger. Can't eat a diamond. Useless. Value. So it was this, see reality, see... seeing what is real and not what our mind tells us about due to our culture or our personalities or just this is it. And if one thing Buddhism does on a fairly low level, it puts you in harmony with your life, puts you in harmony with the world, even the ecosystem, even birds and trees and water. It puts you in harmony with those things by saying they are under laws. Water does its water thing. Fire does its fire thing. Earth does its earth. Wind does its wind. Tornadoes aren't out to get people. That's what they do. Reaction from conditions. It's not divine. It's not intelligent. It just, that's what it does. So the whole world, animals seem to be pretty much in harmony, people seem to be pretty much deluded. So you have to work towards a thing, this is a thing in and of itself, this is what it is, before I start applying things to it. So then we use things wisely. You can be rich, you can have a lot of money, just don't get it by greed, hatred, delusion. Don't get it by stealing, cheating, lying, killing, etc. And don't, those activities will make you very unhappy. Money is fine. There's a lot of things we can do good with money. But when it's my money, then it turns bad. It turns very bad. Okay, we have a half hour break. And then we have meditation. So usually what people do in your welcome, we go up to the house and tea, coffee, etc., and just chat. Yeah.